The last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
It's Friday, which means it's time to focus on some of the stories we didn't get to during the week with our Friday panel. And I'm delighted to say that Donal O'Donoghue, Managing Director at Sanderson Recruitment, is in studio with me today. And we're also joined on the line by Brianna Parkins, broadcaster with Virgin Media Television. Hello to you both. Now, let's start with an ad that drew an awful lot of controversy during the week. This is an ad for tampons that attracted over 80 complaints to the Advertising Standards Authority of Ireland. This was made by Tampax and addressed how tampons should be inserted using a mock chat show setting. Let's first have a listen.
Welcome back. We have got a great show for you today. So, tell me, how many of you ever feel your tampon? You shouldn't. It might mean your tampon isn't in far enough. You gotta get them up there, girls.
Example, our special Tampax Pearl Compact Grip Design is your guide to comfort. Just pull it, lock it, and put it in.
Not just the tip, up to the grip. So get them up there, girls, with Tampax.
Do it for comfort.
Now, let's talk about that ad. The committee upheld the complaints that said that it caused a general offence. Brianna, I might start with you. Did you find that ad to be offensive to women?
Of course not. I have a vagina. Do you know what I mean? I do with that once a month. It's normal. It's such a normal part of my life and most women I know's lives. Like, it's absolutely, I've joined the chorus of outrage. And it's just bizarre, I think, for any woman to think that this ad, there's a couple of things they originally went for in the complaint, and it was over-descriptiveness, and it was demeaning to women and also sexually offensive. Now, if anyone's had a period, they know that putting a tampon is not related to anything sexual, full stop. I'd love to see the gender breakdown of the complainants. I know there was 84 people who complained. I'd love to see the male-female breakdown of the complainants. I think there's a lot to be revealed there.
Yeah, I might get your thoughts on it as well, Donal. As Brianna mentioned there, there were some complaints suggesting that the ad was demeaning to women and that it contained sexual innuendo, but they were rejected by the committee. What were your thoughts on it? What were your thoughts when you first saw it?
Yeah, when I first saw the ad, I certainly didn't have any problem with it. I think one of the things that the complaint said in relation to being demeaning to women was that it queried whether women knew how to use a tampon, which was a very strange thing to come up with. And some of the language that they didn't like around, you know, is it in far enough and not just the tip up to the grip? You know, I thought it was very lighthearted. I thought using the mock chat show was just a very simple way of normalizing it. So you just wonder, is, 84 complaints. Certainly the Advertising Standards Authority saw that it didn't create, you know, kind of widespread upset, but that there was enough to look at the timing that it was run at. But certainly it's probably, the ad was designed to create a bit of education and help people to realise that they shouldn't have discomfort when they're wearing a tampon. And the fact that now we're talking about it, I think, is probably a positive thing.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that, Brianna, because that was kind of the point behind it, wasn't it? It was seen as an opportunity for Tampax to obviously run a kind of an information ad campaign while also flogging their product, and it has everybody talking about it.
I mean, it's a genius example of what's called earned media, where that's, you don't have to pay for an ad spot. So basically, we're just giving Tampax a free kick now, talking about it. All the newspapers that have covered it and have covered the ad and replayed the ad, it's given them millions of dollars of free advertising. It's actually a little bit genius, and it really goes to show that the Barbara Streisand effect, which is when Barbara Streisand, the actress, was trying to get something being made. She wanted her house plans to be made private, and of course it went public because they're having a legal battle about it, and it just made the situation more publicised. This is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. I think Tampax, when they tweeted about it afterwards, summed it up really nicely with a one-liner. They said, if this ad is wrong, we don't want to be right.
Yeah. They also came out and they said, they responded that the intention of the ad wasn't to have any sexual connotations whatsoever or to offend in any way. And they said that their research had shown that a lot of young girls and indeed some young women simply didn't know how to use their product. Is there not, Brianna, instructions on the back of these packs? I mean, do they really need to run an advertising campaign telling people how to use them?
Have you ever seen the instructions? It's like this weird squiggly diagram.
I personally haven't read the instructions on a packet of tampons. I don't know if you don't.
It could be like some kind of like diagram of like some, you know, starfish sea anemone in a science textbook. It makes no sense. And also, not all tampons are created equally. Some tampons have applicators, some don't. In Australia, tampons don't really have applicators. So when I moved to Ireland, I was a bit, like, bit surprised pulling that out of the packet. So it's actually really important education that sometimes isn't covered in school. So I think for a lot of young women and girls out there that had, I mean, what is it, all up to, not just up to the tip, all the way to the grip, like that's going to be in the heads of a lot of women, I think, putting tampons in now.
Yeah. Again, the watchdog, you know, upheld that the ad caused general offence, and that's obviously very different from grave offence. But some of the complaints that were sent into the watchdog were around people sitting down for their dinner. Donal, I might ask you about this. People sitting around for their dinner and seeing this ad and being disgusted and horrified by it. And their complaint was that it shouldn't have been put on at that time.
Yeah, and I think when the company, so when the company responded to that, Procter & Gamble came back and said, look, you know, they certainly haven't run the ad during times where there's a high proportion of kids watching TV, because that's not their target demographic. Certainly their intention wasn't to cause offence. The interesting thing I thought was when some of the complaints said there was a sexual nature, and I thought, how do they come around with that? And it was the line that where she says, "You've got to get them up there, girls." And again, Procter & Gamble came out and said that's absolutely not the intent. But I think it's great that they have us all having the conversation. And in a world where so much advertising and so much media becomes white noise, you know, they've done their job and they've got people talking.
Yeah, well, I can honestly say at 36 years of age, I've learned more about tampons in the past week than I have in the entirety of my life to date. But I wonder, Brianna, will the advertising watchdog be inundated with complaints about Richard Bruton's promo video encouraging people to staycation in his constituency in North Dublin?
Yeah, this was an interesting one, and it's always dicey for politicians to strip down and go for a swim. But Richard Bruton, while trying to show off his local north side village, he decided in his infinite wisdom to strip down and emerge from the water, kind of like a sexy Bond girl. and it broke the internet. People were not ready for his rig, as we call in Australia, for his body. And he says the whole thing, he's amazed over it. Now, if you're asking me, if you're putting yourself topless in a video and you work out to the extent that he does, it's not amazing. He knows. He's worked for that. He said to the Indo yesterday that he doesn't go to the gym, which I don't know. I think his abs might tell a different story.
What were your thoughts when you saw the promo video? Did it remind you? Was it reminiscent of Daniel Craig emerging from a tropical ocean in one of the Bond movies, Casino Royale, I think it was?
Yeah, he looks absolutely freezing. So I think it's great that he wants to promote Howth and his North Dublin constituency. I thought the video was, like, I quite enjoyed watching it. He was, you know, popping into a few places, checking out some local food and some sporting things. He's having a cycle. And then he goes, I was shocked. Like, I'm 45, he's 67, and he's ripped. So
he's in great shape, in fairness.
It's absolutely ridiculous. And I think it's just a great, it's a great thing to promote to many of us that are rocking the dad bod these days, that, you know, in
or
your
the 60s, lockdown stone as well. I mean, he didn't seem to put one on. If he did, there was nothing there before lockdown. But Brianna, he did come out and you spoke about that article and his reaction afterwards. And one of the things that I found quite noteworthy was the fact that he said that it was incredible that you would spend years working away on various policies and get no attention whatsoever. And then you do this, you come out of a swim with your top off and look, everything blows up.
That's true. And didn't our former Australian Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, find that out the hard way? He kept appearing in Speedos, which is upsetting for anyone, any man to appear in Speedos. Yeah. Like, it just should be banned, full stop. But he kept doing it time after time, and it would always be after sort of a tricky political week, and then bam, you'd see him in a pair of Speedos down at the surf. And this has worked out really well for the government, because they've had an absolute howler of the week with the PUP backflip, and then all of a sudden here's Richard Bruton not wearing a shirt. Yeah. And it's racked up 360,000 views, so it's been a nice distraction.
And ever a good man to get a soundbite in, our Taoiseach Leo Varadkar did a great tweet where he said, "Don't let Richard's beach bod put you off availing of the government's stay and spend initiative this autumn."
He's just jealous. I'd imagine Leo's in the gym now working those abs this evening to see if he can better him. Brianna, you might tell us a little bit about Buddy, the German Shepherd. This was, listeners may remember, the first dog to test positive for COVID-19 in the United States. And we have some bad news this evening, unfortunately.
Sadly, Buddy has died. Yeah, he didn't go off to live with a nice family on the farm. Sadly, Buddy succumbed to his symptoms after a long battle with COVID. He was diagnosed in May. So originally he was showing symptoms back in April, and his family couldn't get him tested because obviously the focus was on humans with COVID and testing them first. They finally found a vet to test, and the test picked up antibodies. And apparently he just hasn't been the same since. He was found throwing up blood, and he lost control of his bladder, and he just didn't get better. Poor little thing. Six years old.
Donald, this raises some interesting questions. And as Brianna mentioned, clearly the focus has been on humanoids since the start of the pandemic. But it's clear now that, you know, our pets and animals do get the virus as well. Do we know how bad the problem is? I suppose the numbers mightn't be very leading because of the fact that they're not being tested.
Exactly. And I think what's interesting here, and I think we have to say about Buddy as well, he did have other underlying health issues when the two vets that weren't involved in his care afterwards did some tests on him, and he did have some underlying, they thought he may have had cancer as well. So there was definitely underlying health conditions. But there's some scary stuff happening out there. There was another article which showed that a pet cat in England tested positive after apparently catching COVID-19 from its owners. So the infection was confirmed by the Animal and Plant Health Agency in Weybridge in Surrey on the 22nd of July. And they've confirmed, Public Health England has confirmed, that it's the first case of a domestic cat testing positive in the UK. Now, of course, they're saying it's not a cause for an alarm and that there's no evidence of pets transmitting the disease to humans at this stage. But we're starting to see more and more cases of animals in different countries, testing positive. So I suppose people are reminding about hand hygiene, I suppose, and washing your hands after dealing with pets and so on as well. But it just shows how things are unfolding and how we're starting to learn more and more about the virus as time goes by.
Yeah, and the numbers are low, as I mentioned. And again, this could be just due to the fact that there's no mandatory testing requirement for animals. But over in the US, for example, fewer than 25 dogs and cats have been confirmed to be infected with the virus. But let's turn our attention now to one of the staples of Irish households that will soon be no more. The massive Argos catalogue that could keep a door open. It was so big, it's been axed. The company's decided to go digital, and a nation mourns for it. Brianna, I know you grew up in Australia, so I might ask you, Donal, to just outline the place that this jumbo catalogue has had in Irish society.
Yeah, so I think the interesting thing about the Argos catalogue is that probably, you know, so many Santa lists and birthday lists were developed by turning down the page or circling in marker what you wanted to get. What I found interesting to learn about this was at its height back in the 90s, it was the most widely printed publication in all of Europe. So over a billion, with a B, over a billion catalogues were printed since the 70s. So that's a lot of trees. So I think Argos moving with the times and going online to argos.com is a good thing. The last run of the catalogue was 3.9 million copies, but in its heyday, it would have been a 10 million print run. So, when I think back on it, or for anyone growing up in the 70s, 80s or 90s, I remember getting Big Track for Christmas one year after circling it for Santa in the Argos catalogue.
Yeah, so, I used to run out of markers. I was circling so many things in the pages. Did you have anything like that down under, Brianna?
No, I mean, we have sort of different big box retailers. So you'd get kind of like Toys R Us and that kind of stuff, or you'd get sort of Kmart and Target. But there was never anything like that. I mean, the only thing that comes close to that is the IKEA catalogue, which has been repurposed as friends have been using it as standing desks during the COVID lockdown. They've been jacking their monitors up.
That's
on
right,
it. I imagine
yeah.
the Argos catalogue has gone quite the same way.
I mean, clearly it makes sense, though. I mean, not just from an environmental point of view, Brianna, but also because of the prevalence of online shopping nowadays, particularly during the pandemic. But that's likely to continue post-pandemic as well. So it does make sense.
Completely. I don't know if there's anyone out there still getting the Argos catalogue. I mean, I'm sure there are elderly people who have limited access to the internet and don't trust the internet and want to look at something in their hands and flick through the catalogue. There is a bit of still a bit of a delight in flicking through an old catalogue and seeing what they have. So I think that element will be missed, but definitely from an environmental point of view. I mean, God, if you're printing millions of these things and they're huge, I mean, they're the size of sometimes a small child when you're looking at them.
Oh, these things, they'd be stacked up inside the store and you need a hand almost bringing one out to the car. And the in-store experience has changed as well down through the years because it's all tablets now. So you're in there, you're not flicking through a catalogue like you used to. It's just, I suppose, moving with the times. And we'll also move with the times and talk a little bit about Trump's praise for this so-called, his words not mine, a very impressive doctor who believes in demon sperm, among other things. Donald, tell us a little bit about Stella Emanuel.
Yes, so Stella Emanuel is a doctor and a conspiracy theorist and a fundamentalist Christian pastor. And Trump said she was very impressive after she was promoting hydroxychloroquine as an effective treatment for coronavirus after it has been proved on, you know, by the World Health Organization and a lot of the other clinical trials to have more risks than effect in treating the coronavirus. She filmed a video that said this virus has a cure. It's called hydroxychloroquine, zinc and Zithromax. You don't need a mask. There is a cure. So Trump retweeted this. Twitter and Facebook have taken down her videos on their fact-checking side of things. But it started, I suppose, people to wondering, you know, who is Dr. Stella Emanuel? So we looked into it. She was born in the Cameroon and gained a medical degree in Nigeria. She now lives in Houston, Texas. So she's verified with the Houston Medical Board as a practitioner. She has a practice in what they would call a strip mall, like a small shopping center. And a couple of doors up, she's got a what they call the Firepower Ministry, which is her, I suppose, religious group that she preaches from. And she preaches some pretty crazy stuff. She's had sermons where she's talked about alien DNA being used in medicine, and she's talked about people being impregnated following dreams with demons, and it just really speaks to the credibility of the people who are endorsing her. So we've got Trump retweeting her and we have Madonna retweeting her.
And I want to ask you about that, Brianna, because some of the things that Donald has outlined there are just outlandish. But when she's tweeting about things and talking about things in relation to cures for COVID-19 and talking about people not needing a mask, there is a cure. And then you have the President of the United States, who is supposed to be leading their defense against this virus, retweeting and supporting what she's saying. I mean, it's very dangerous for the wider public, isn't it?
And it doesn't make sense because his administration brought in regulations and supported wearing masks than to retweet someone who says masks aren't necessary. Just a complete contradiction. And he paid for it because his account got suspended for 12 hours under the misinformation procedures that Twitter have now enacted. So if you retweet a video or something that can be easily disproved or hasn't been proven and can be considered misinformation, Twitter will suspend your account. You can be suspended indefinitely, which has happened to some people in Ireland recently. But it's just a bizarre story. Like, she's also on top of believing in basically, she says that key gynecological issues, normal things, you know, not normal things, but horrific things like tumors and cysts can be caused by demon sperm, i.e. having sex with demons in your sleep, which I haven't heard any other credible gynecologist ever talk about. But she also believes, and again, this is quite bizarre that Trump is sharing this, that she believes that people in the government are non-human reptiles.
Yeah.
And that they lurk the earth. So maybe she's trying to tell us something.
Make of that what you will. Finally then, and really quickly, because we have run out of time, but I do want to ask you, Brianna, Australia is obviously somewhere that's very close to Irish people's hearts. I spent a year there myself back in the day, and the situation in relation to the virus from your homeland isn't great, is it?
It's terrible. And you know what? They're still talking about you all these years later. No, Australia is, it's really key. Everyone I've met has family there or spent time working there. And Victoria is the worst state hit. So we were actually, Australia was actually doing quite well. In May, we had no recorded cases nationally, which is, it's just quite a big deal for a population of 25 million. So to get that down to zero. But what's happening is a second wave. And there's been a bit of debate over whether this is a second wave or whether because the borders were closed very early on, all travel, non-essential travel is effectively banned by the government. Not a green list, not a should not go, banned. You cannot leave. They've sealed off the borders between Victoria and Queensland. Sorry, sealed off the borders at Victoria and Queensland as well.
Hasn't seemed so to work, quite though.
There's been a hardline approach. Well, what's happened is there have been recorded cases, and the contact tracing is quite good. So it seems to be from people coming into the country. So you can still come back in if you're a citizen, but you had to quarantine for 2 weeks. And it was found that security in Melbourne, there were allegations that security guards were sleeping with people quarantining. There have been allegations that security let people out, and they think that might be where the second wave is occurring.
Okay.
What was interesting on this one as well is they actually enforce the quarantine. It's not like in Ireland where they tell you you should quarantine.
Yeah.
Like I had friends that went back recently and they were sent straight to a quarantine hotel. Strictly, don't leave the room for 2 weeks. Your food is brought to you.
It's the only way, in my opinion, it's the only way it'll work. But look, we'll have to leave it there. Donald Donoghue, Managing Director at Sanderson Recruitment, and Brianna Parkins, broadcaster with Virgin Media Television. Thank you both very much.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.